sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
China's index of services is expanding. Election week is dead ahead. The dollar is surging. And our guest, L.A. Little. All this and much more on episode number 287 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, we're back from a very short week of trading on the exchanges in the U.S. This is Andrew Horowitz. It is now officially into November. We are into the first full week of November, where we have elections coming up on Tuesday, and there's a lot to grumble and grouse about when it comes to the earnings week. We're going to talk about that. We also have some things to talk about when it comes to China and what is actually happening with markets. I had some questions come in about Apple and retail and insurance stocks due to the hurricane or the storm, and so we're going to kind of buckle in and talk about that as well. Hope you're doing well. Hope you are getting some power back if you're in the Northeast region, and that was terribly hit, obviously. Many people are still without power and probably will be so for, next week, it seems. And it's kind of amazing in the age of technology that we're in now, in the time of incredible amounts of efficiency that we have, we're so incredibly reliant on electric. And how we can see how easily that can be taken away by Mother Nature. And even though we are seeing that it is being restored very rapidly, or at least as fast as they can do so, there's still a lot of people without power. A lot of fuel is still a problem in the Northeast. And we just wish you the very, very best. And hopefully that you will get over this very quickly and the rebuilding process, I know, will start. And we'll continue on, and your spirits are high. With that, we have to obviously talk about that this week is also the week of the presidential election, as well as other elections throughout the regions. And there is some talk these days, obviously, that we see a lead in the Obama side of things, and that is gaining after much of the last few days of campaigning that has gone on. We'll see what happens. I'm not making any predictions here, but there is some other talk about that. You know, you're hearing that if Obama wins, you sell stocks, and if Romney wins, you sell bonds. Or the contra of that is also the call. But what's interesting is that we've seen under Obama a very loose policy, especially with the Fed, of making sure that the economy is primed and stocks have liked that. So I wonder why there's that talk going around, and while you hear a lot of that underlying, a lot of this election discussion when it comes from the financial markets, the only thing that I could really pin on it is that when you think about how there has been a continual push to bring down or at least have the most elite and the companies of the world, particularly those in the U.S., pay for some of the things that have to be paid for, like the deficit and the enormous amount of debt that's outstanding, as well as make up some of the inequities that are involved in the rich and the poor and the middle class, et cetera. Maybe there's some conversation that's going on that if Obama does win a second election, then what's going to happen is that he's going to be that much more invigorated and that much more steadfast in his way of going about attacking those particular classes. And maybe that's not as good for stocks. On the other hand, when you look at Romney, you know, the talk is that he's good for big business and, you know, that he's going to crush the small companies, or, you know, he's going to really do a number on anybody that doesn't have wealth. I don't know where the truth to that is, but at least the market taste and the market underlying murmurs have been talking about that. So we'll see what happens on Tuesday, but we'll also see if it's going to be actually decided on Tuesday. Because now we have the issue of potential problems with voting in the Northeast area and some states in particular, some regions, some counties, some towns that have you know, inadequate ability to bring up their polling stations due to, you know, power outages. And the fact that if people are without power and without electricity, without gas, and without ability to find somewhere to live, what is their incentive going to be to go out and vote right now? They have other things to worry about that are much more pressing. So when we look at this, we have to really think about, you know, the turnout from the Northeast region and what that's going to really mean to the elections. We'll have to see how that plays out. I am certain that over the next couple of days, you're going to see a lot of news about this, a lot of alternatives that are being brought up, whether it's going to be through mail, whether it's going to be through postponement, whether it's going to be through electronic email, online. But there is going to be something that's going to be brought up. There's going to be some things that are done. I just hope it's not like the hanging Chad syndrome we had down here in Florida a few elections ago. And you know how the markets reacted to that. It wasn't really healthy because there was no resolution. And it kept on going back and forth and back and forth of who was the winner. That was it took some time to actually get the results. That's not a good situation to have. Now, last week we saw a very interesting situation where all of a sudden we came back. The markets were open on Wednesday, and there was this immediate move higher for the futures initially that sold off dramatically due to not only the hurricane and storm, but also due to some of the announcements of Apple shuffling around their management and, you know, the earnings that were going on. And then you come in here on to your desk and to your various platforms, you take a look and you see, wow, that's interesting that futures really over the last few days sold off dramatically. But they're back to even now. And then on Thursday, we saw the markets really ramp up for no apparent reason. There really wasn't anything that was out there that was so great that you can really pin your finger on. But there was, you know, there was something that was going on underneath. And the question I raised in a few different discussions was this an actual short cover rally, a squeeze ahead of the weekend, ahead of potentially the jobs numbers and the election? And I posted a blog post about that showing how the stocks that had the highest short interest were actually leading the rally. It was a really interesting rally that we saw that there was a lot of short covering done on that day on relatively low volume. A lot of the traders and a lot of the desks out there were still not functional. So I also said I think that, you know, you have to kind of ignore some of the things that went on the first couple of days of markets returning to operations. As a matter of fact, I think last week in the podcast, we talked about that as well. And then on Friday, we saw a better jobs number in terms of the amount of people that were employed, and the jobs rate did tick up to 7.9% from 7.8, which was expected by many economists. And that really took a very big move on the upside for futures prior to the market opening, and even factory orders came in a little bit better. And we saw a whole host of economic numbers that looked actually better. And then all of a sudden, markets started to sell off and sell off very hard. One of the things that that had to do with was the value of the dollar, or look at the value of the euro. There's been a very tight correlation, as we've been talking about here, with the euro and the dollar and the equity markets. Now, if you look at the equity markets and you track back, and I post this quite often on Twitter, if you follow me, the correlation between the euro and the equity markets, you'll notice that they are pretty much work in lockstep. And that's because there is a variety of either carry trades that are going on, there are robotics, automation, there are various program trading that's going on that looks at the value of the dollar, the value of the euro, and then and stocks, and kind of mixes them back and forth depending on where it's going. And this can be seen almost on a tick-by-tick basis. And when we saw the euro dropping dramatically, because, of course, you have two things going on. You have the problems in Europe that are not abating. And the second issue you have, of course, is that with better jobs numbers and better economics, you would think that there's going to be a flock towards the U.S. to put money in, because if they're the stronger economy right now around the world, that's where money's going to flow into. You see also money flow into some of the areas that are recovering, like Hong Kong or China, or, you know, you look at the various currencies around the world, and you'll see this happen on a regular basis when there is normal trading that goes on with the currencies. We've seen a lot of artificial trading going on where many countries are trying to hold up their currencies or bring down their currency because it's better for their exports potentially. But sometimes when you see a significant situation like what we've seen with the recent economics that are really showing better grounding here in the U.S. and then weakening around the world, there's going to be a natural move of currencies. That's what they do to get stronger. Now, that's not good for exports. That's not necessarily good for stocks. The inverse relationship with currency and stocks is ongoing. And you see this a lot with Japan, as a matter of fact. You saw what happened after their tsunami, by the way. There was a major move higher in their currency. And that really shouldn't have been the case, because if you think about that for a second, what is happening there is that if an economy is struck by a major situation like a tsunami like they were hit with, that would slow down their overall growth, you would think that you would have a weakening currency. But what happened there was a repatriation trade that we all seemed to see after it was all occurring, where many of the insurance companies would have to bring money back in the form of yen from other currencies that they held, because they're going to have to pay a major amount of insurance claims. And the rebuilding process would be done in yen versus anything else. So initially, there was a big drive up of the yen, and then it started to fall down dramatically as the reality of the economic situation really took hold. Now, I don't think there's the same type of repatriation that goes on here, although if you look at the reinsurers, there is some need for them to bring that are not based in the U.S. and may not be based in U.S. dollars and their currency and some of the things. They obviously would bring money back to the U.S. because they're going to have to pay out claims based in dollars. Now, again, I don't think there's that much of a repatriation trade going on here. It doesn't seem as logical, because the U.S. dollar is the base currency for so many different companies, and it doesn't, you know, there's a lot more liquidity, and it just doesn't seem right. But if you look at the economics and you look at the comparisons and you look at maybe the concern trade that's going on there and the fear trade that may be out there when it comes to the rest of the world, bringing dollars to the U.S. is not the worst idea in the world, especially at the level it was. Now, the euro dropped significantly. I mean, just really just kept on going down throughout the day. And as that happened, we saw a very simple correlation where stocks continued to fall as well. On top of that, you saw the major winners of the last, last year, let's say, and one of the great examples is Apple. Apple's down 3.5% on Friday, and it just couldn't hold anymore. Now, Apple came out with their iPad mini, their iPhone 5, their upgrades to their iMac desktop series, and ever since the iPhone 5 was announced, the stock has rolled almost 20%. Pretty remarkable if you think about it. But perhaps the biggest concern came when the iPad mini pricing came out, and it was a big disappointment because there was a lot of hope resting on the fact that it would be competition to some of the other iPad or the tablets in its size factor, in its form factor, and the truth is that it came out a little bit higher in price. Now, whether or not it's a superior product or not, the fact is that this was supposed to be a tweener. We talked about this a lot on the DH Unplugged show, and the reality is that when you look at the pricing points of the other products in that same line, of the same lineup of tablets in that size, etc., Apple's is much higher. Now, that's okay when you consider, well, laptops are a lot higher in price and their iPod may be higher than other MP3 players and their iPhone compared. But this was supposed to be something that was much more affordable, at least from the context of what Wall Street was thinking. The other question is, how much cannibalization is this going to have on their other products, on their the other iPads? They just came out with a new one of that. So there's a lot of things that are swirling around on top of the management changes that happened as well. So Apple is kind of in the doghouse right now. And on top of that, as we've said, and I've noted, a lot of other stocks are really not doing that well. Some have been surprising to the upside. But now when you look at the revenue structure and the revenue stream that's being generated by the S&P 500 stocks compared to where it has been, if what they've taken in sales, I should be saying, really, and focus on that, it's really slowing down dramatically. Now, EPS has been holding up somewhat. There's been better surprises. As a matter of fact, there's a post going up that I wrote on Monday, for Monday, that shows you the differential between the sales and the EPS and sales, and how sales have really been disappointing. Matter of fact, disappointing and surprising to the downside for most areas, especially in the telecom area. Now, let's back up a second and talk about the employment report that we saw. Again, there was a better number of people that were getting jobs. The jobless rate went to 7.9 that was expected. But one of the things that was really interesting to take a look at was the average weekly hours and the average weekly pay, the amount of money people were making and how much they were working. Clearly, there's a lot of part-time employment that's going on for whatever reason that may be, whether it's just testing the waters to see if they can withstand keeping people on for some time if the demand stays higher, or maybe there's some campaign and political workers that are on the payrolls. But here's the point. The fact is, when you look at the average weekly pay, the income that they're making from those jobs, it is down, and it has been going down, and is the average hours worked per week. That was a real concerning factor when it came to the employment number, I think. I also think there's a little bit of, is it going to get any better than this with a lot of the economics that are coming out right now? Is this kind of the peak after what we've seen? Because we're seeing a slowdown when it comes to the outlook of companies that are reporting. We're seeing that the slowdown continues over in Europe. Clearly, China, their ISM index was a little bit better. Their service index was a little bit better. And so we're not as worried maybe of a hard landing over there. But at the same time, we also know they need to make the economics look as good as possible for the big handoff of changing of the government in the next couple of months. And that's something that we kind of have underlying all this. But when you look at the jobs numbers, you have to say that it's clearly better. There's no question about that than we've been seeing, or the trend has been better. Housing has been better. Manufacturing has been better. Consumer sentiment has been better. But again, I wonder if it's just a condition right now of, hey, I wonder if this is as good as it's going to get, especially when we factor in the after effects of the hurricane and the storm. I had a lot of questions come in to me recently about, okay, well, what do you think about the insurance companies? What do you think about retail? I found it really interesting that initially retail sold off when the markets opened last week, but then they popped, Macy's popped, and a few other companies that you would think should be shut down for a little while and have some problems really started moving well. Home Depot, Lowe's, we understand why that did better. You know, obviously there's a lot of generators and parts being bought and all sorts of things that have to do to fix-ups of the house that may have been either, partially damaged or have some kind of damage from the storms. But at the same time, you have to think, well, why would retail and the big box retail be catching a bid here? You can say, well, maybe there's something to be said about how people have lost a lot of clothes and they've lost various appliances and all sorts of home picture frames. You kind of go down the list. And that is going to cause them to go out shopping again when they have their hurricane insurance and replacement of things and all that. Well, the hurricane insurance that we're seeing is maybe going to cover about 50% of the insured property damage, about $50 billion or so is estimated, is insured. So you're still going to have to come out of pocket on some of that. It's possible that because the storm has been deemed a tropical storm, not a hurricane when it came on shore, and therefore, the deductibles that were going to be seen for many of the homeowners that had hurricane coverage, which would be maybe 2 or 3% of their home value, is now not going to be applied, and it's going to be the regular deductible, maybe it's $500 or $1,000 for this, would be to the betterment of the consumer. On the other hand, there was also a lot of flood damage. And not everybody may have flood insurance that was not in coastal areas. And there was a lot of flooding outside of the coastal areas. So there's a lot of give and take when it comes to the concept of how is retail going to do here. And I would just say that really let the charts lead you in this circumstance, because the fundamentals right now are going to be rather squishy. Okay? They're going to be kind of questionable when we're looking at the reasons why something's moving or not. We saw some companies, for example, we alerted on Trigger Point Research Alerts, Zumiez, which is symbol Z-U-M-Z. We alerted that last, about a week and a half ago on that to look for a short entry. And actually, they came out with a really poor same-store sale and guidance on an interim release, and the stock dropped like 15%. So we collected our target on that, made some nice money on it, and kind of moved on. But there is going to be a disparity between, I believe, the different retail outlets and how they do and how they fare during this. So just keep a watch on the charts and what they're doing. In terms of insurance, some of the insurance companies actually picked up a little bit because the idea is, well, you know, the insurance companies will have to pay some claims. There you have some backing for that and some reserves for that. At the same time, though, there's a lot of reinsurers. And if you look at the reinsurers, they really got smacked pretty good over the last several days. Well, the reinsurance will be they're the insurance companies for the insurance companies. And they're the ones that really took the brunt of this whole thing and are going to have the brunt of the storm, so to speak, in terms of financial damage and how much they're going to have to pay out. But again, at the same time, there's a give and take here, as we talked about with deductibles and potential how much is actually insured versus not. Watch the charts on this. Watch for those points that they may be breaking down or breaking up. Watch for this because that's what's really going to tell you what's going on, because there's a lot of unknowns out there right now. And that's why there's going to be a lot of movement of the underlying stocks and of indices until we can get some resolution to not only the storm, but the presidential election, as well as what's going on in Europe, as well as, of course, what's happening with the fiscal cliff. These are all things that are going to be what we can call them headwinds or disruptors of the market right now, because it has to do with the certainty of outcome. Okay, there's a light week of economics that are coming up. We have the service index that's coming up, and that has been actually doing pretty well. And there's a lot of anticipation for a good number there. That's the ISM number, not the manufacturing, but the service index. Now, I was out at a restaurant the other night, went out for a quick salad bar over at Ruby Tuesday, and it was packed. And I was looking around saying, well, that's kind of interesting. It's really busy here. What's going on? I said, maybe people are really out. They're out just spending money and they're out there, you know, doing what they can to, go to restaurants, even though it's not a high scale, big expense. But after my meal, I kind of sat around and started thinking about it. I called over the manager. I said, can you tell me something? What's the story? Is it always this crowded? Now, she told me, this is what she told me. It's not always this crowded, but what's happening is we have a tremendous amount of coupons that are coming in. I said, really? She said, we did a big coupon drop over the last week or so, and one of the stores down the road closed, so we're getting the overflow from that. Plus, the coupons are like a 50% off coupon, buy one, get one free kind of thing. I guess the restaurant is hoping that they'll get some additional sales of liquor and maybe some more people that come in to check out the place, et cetera, so it's a bit of advertising plus upselling. But again, she said it's not really like this all the time. It's really the coupons. And I wonder how many companies are really trying to drive foot traffic and potential sales with coupons right now. And I think that's going on pretty dramatically. We've seen that there's a lot of discussion from many retail stores that have been saying that they have been driving traffic and they've been driving sales through the use of coupons. And the point there is, though, that you have to realize that they're dropping their sales and dropping their overall potential earnings just to try to get people in the door. So that's something that's a trend that we need to watch out for and take a look at, because that's really something that is going to be seen in the overall net results of the companies moving forward. There can be a lot of excitement because they're busy, a lot of excitement because they have things happening there, a lot of movement, but yet at the end of the day, the bottom line is going to be affected pretty dramatically. Couple of things I want to mention. Podcast Awards. If you haven't voted yet, please do so. You can vote once per day over at podcastawards.com. The Disciplined Investor. This one, you made a People's Choice nomination and a choice in the business category and DH Unplugged under the general category. And if you like the show, please do me a favor. We don't charge anything for the show. Go over to podcastawards.com and vote for the Disciplined Investor podcast. Please do it as much as possible. Tell your friends to do it. Tweet it out. Send out some emails, so that people can actually get the voting, because it's the only way that we can actually come up on top of all this. And we've been in the running 3 years in a row and haven't won that People's Choice Award. And I'm hoping that you can do what you can to get that in and get your vote going. So make sure to check that out over at podcastawards.com. I'll also mention that, you have to think about this storm and all that, and you have to think about all that's going on around the country, the meetings that were canceled. You look at how many hotel rooms were unbooked and how many flights were canceled and the meetings that were canceled going on. And What a great time to talk about GoToMeeting. Think about it for a second, because assuming you have electricity, assuming you have internet, you could actually have that meeting that was supposed to happen even though your flight was canceled. You could just quickly go to GoToMeeting, take the information that you were sharing, whether it's a Word document, a PowerPoint, or your screen, whatever it is, share it with somebody else, talk to them eye to eye, look at them with the GoToMeeting platform very easily because you have the HD faces that is on there. And how great is that? How great is it that you can actually talk with them with the fact that there's no flights moving? I mean, you have the ability to have business still going when nobody else does. And you can get your free trial, 30 days free, absolutely free, at GoToMeeting.com. And you have to click on the Try It Now button and put in the code podcast. And you will get 30 days of free GoToMeeting. And use it now if it's a great opportunity for you because maybe you're stuck in, can't see people. This is a great time for you to check this out and use it. GoToMeeting.com. Now, one of the things we do with our guests each week is we kind of try to get them to speak with us on the weekend so that we have the freshest information available. Now, this week I did something different and actually worked out pretty well because I had this interview with L.A. Little. This was not on purpose, actually, but I had this interview with L.A. Little on Thursday. Okay. And what was interesting was that was the day that the markets really were rallying. And one of the things he said in that conversation, which you're going to hear in a moment, is that he was talking about how if you were short biased and if you were looking for markets to go down, the best thing that can happen right now is to markets to move up into a resistance area, and then you would see a confirmation of the potential highest level to, again, confirm a short entry. And I thought that was really interesting that he said that, and that's one thing that I took away from it. But I thought it was really interesting that we did talk on Thursday again, which I don't usually do, and then we had that conversation, and then lo and behold, on Friday, the markets just totally, you know, open up, cave down, and just really just get obliterated. And so I thought that was pretty prescient of him to talk about that and, again, talk about it ahead of time. And I thought that we would, have to mention that, you know, it was done on Thursday. And that's something that I think was really interesting, talking about his ability. So let's listen into that conversation. So how about we talk about technical analysis? We have L.A. Little with us. He's an author of a book called Trend Trading Setups. Also, he is a prolific blogger and an actual trader. L.A., how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you today?
I'm great. You know, L.A., I feel like I'm on kind of American Idol. We'll call this Technical Analysis Idol. How's that?
I'm not sure what to say about that, but we'll see if we can fulfill that dream.
So on your site, which is tatoday.com, you have a lot of really interesting things there that I wanted to talk about. You talked about things like time frames, and you talked about different types of setups. But I thought maybe I would just start with just a question that you could probably ask. Do you have a favorite trading setup, a pattern, an indicator, something that you can share with us?
Yeah, probably so. I mean, a lot of the research I did over the last year in writing that Trend Trading Setups book was an attempt to distill trading down to the simplest form and to ask, what are those characteristics, if there are some, what are those characteristics that can define a great trade setup? And as I went through that work, there was a few that fell out that made a lot of sense and that were not something I had thought about before. For example, if we look at the S&P chart right now, mm-hmm. And you look at there was two large bars both on the ECB announcement and the Fed announcement,
mm-hmm.
and that bottom bar on the ECB, the tail end of that, if I'm looking at the S&P, it's looks like about 1403.74.
Mm-hmm.
There's a swing point right below that, and that swing point is below of the 9-4 day. That swing point happens to be a swing point on both the short-term time frame and the intermediate-term time frame, and there happens to be another swing point on the short-term time frame back on 8-10. If you take those two together, and if you consider that if those break, I call that multiple breaks on multiple time frames.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get that, you usually see an acceleration in the direction of the break. That's a great trade, especially on the downside, because the downside moves a lot faster. And so you're usually in and out of those trades in two or three bars, you know, depending on what time frame we're talking about. And usually you're a winner about 89% of the time.
Now, at the same time, those also are clearly forming a support pattern. I can't tell you how many times over the last several days, weeks, we've kind of gotten to that point, and it's become a bounce point. Now, there's two different things, right? There's the S&P cash that trades regular hours, 9:30 to 4 p.m., and then you have the S&P futures. And those numbers are a little bit different when you look at the two, but when you look at the levels, generally they're the same in terms of the level that you can say is one to the other. So right now they're acting as support, don't you think?
They absolutely are. Matter of fact, it's an anchored, I call things anchored support, anchored being that that's where you can measure supply and demand from some prior period. And that is an anchored support area, and it should bounce from here. And matter of fact, Friday there was a number of signals across four of the five major indexes that said we should bounce. And of course, then we had the outage. You know, we didn't trade for 2 days. Yesterday, nobody knew what to do, you know, a little bit of hesitation. And then today, it got its bounce going, and that's what it should have done. And a lot of the way, you know, the way I look at the market is I like to look at it from a very short-term perspective to drive my long-term thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And if I always feel like if I stay in tune with what's happening on the shorter term, I will be where I need to be in the long term. And, you know, it's just the way I trade it because it's too hard for me to see what's coming 3 months out. It's too many factors. But, you know, 2-3 weeks out, you can make some prognoses that, you know, have some higher probability of actually coming true. That particular setup right now, yeah, it was a setup to bounce. It is going to bounce. And matter of fact, what you're going to find is as it goes back up now, talking about your, you know, just classical stuff, That bottom of the Fed bar, the top of the ECB bar, that is an anchored resistance zone now.
Yep.
And as it goes back up there, it's going to have trouble.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting because you say there was a setup that it looked like was going to bounce. I agree with you. But I think you could also say that if we did break, obviously all bets are off, right? And it would have been a whole different discussion. And I'm talking about from right now. Who knows in the future? But I'm talking right now, that would have been a change of venue, and you would say, hey, wait a minute, you know, this is now breaking down because we were in a downtrend over the last couple of weeks on the short term, you know, daily or something of that nature. And that would have actually caused you to do a much different transaction, right?
It would have caused an absolutely different transaction. And matter of fact, if you're bearish, you wanted to see this bounce because it's going to set up the time that you need to allow the break to take place if, in fact, it comes back down there and does break. You know, if it broke right now, it's hard to take that trade. It would have been a fast move down and a fast move right back up,
right,
is the way it would have probably traded. Mm-hmm. You would have had to, you know, been in a day or two and out on the short side. But yeah, it would have. That's a multiple break point on multiple swing, you know, swing points, and that usually leads to an accelerated move over the next couple bars.
One of the things that you had talked about is, and we just covered a little bit about multi-time frames, and of course using whether it's weekly or 60-minute or daily or whatever it may be. Do you use any of the classical indicators like the MACD, stochastics, or RSI, or whatever? Name your poison.
Zero.
Okay, good, because we're not big fans of those either. I mean, they're interesting. There's something to look at, but you know, there's a lot of people I think that rely on those, and I think that they were good at a time until everybody started using them, maybe. And, you know, we're in a different market environment now, and I think you would tend to agree with that.
The market always has a way of taking away whatever advantage is built.
Right.
And those indicators, you know, when they first came out and they weren't widespreadly used, they probably had an advantageous factor to them for those that were early adopters. But all indicators like that have certain setups that they're based on, right? I mean, almost all of them are based on trend.
Right.
And most of them are lagging, and that they're using some sort of a moving average usually, you know, like the MACD and so forth. You know, if you don't really understand what's underneath the tool, you know, it's just, you know, using a hammer is one thing. It's pretty obvious what it's supposed to do. But if I'm using a jackhammer, it might not be quite as obvious as to how I should use it.
Right.
And you know, the more complicated the tools get, unless you really understand the math behind them and what they're really doing, I think you're actually setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah. Because I mean, you know, when you look at the things that come standard on like at stockcharts.com and you say, "Oh, well, there's a MACD crossover I'm going to buy." By the way, it may work very nicely. I'm not suggesting that it doesn't work, right? I mean, at all times, but there is something to be said about, you know, the change in the environment of the markets and, you know, machines taking over versus humans in some cases with trading and all that combined really is a strange change to what's happened. And I think I agree with you looking at volume at time, volume at price, and looking at where traders are actually entering or exiting positions is something a bit smarter.
You know, Andrew, in my opinion, it's important to be able to try to find some way to measure supply and demand at critical points. Whether you do that the way I do it, whether you do it in some other manner, it doesn't matter. But that, you know, in the end, that's what drives it, supply and demand.
Right, clearly.
And if you can figure out where those points are and then see how the market attacks those points, right, then you can make decisions about what it's trying to tell you.
Right. Good point. What is the Trading Cube setup?
Well, the Trading Cube is it's actually not a setup. It's a visualization of three things. It's a cube because there's really nine things it shows you. It's basically nine charts. So if you look at the Trading Cube, let's take Alcoa or something. Alcoa has three time frames that are kind of standardized that people use. Independent of whether you're a day trader or a swing trader or whatever, there's usually three time frames you're trying to look at. Take the swing trader case, which is the normal one most people use, which is daily charts, weekly charts, and monthly charts.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've done is standardized it to say every chart I look at has about 60 bars. And the reason I do that is because I algorithmically look at trend. And so when I look at the cube, what I'm looking at is three time frames, daily, weekly, and monthly, for Alcoa, for the sector that Alcoa trades in, because the sector influence is important, and for the general market, because the general market influence is important. And so if I look at all three of those, that's basically nine charts represented in terms of qualified trend in a snapshot view. It's almost like an accountant's balance sheet, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can get a good feel of what the company looks like at a snapshot in time.
So when you and then you mentioned the swing. What's the other ones? You mentioned other time frames.
Well, there's you could have daily time frames. It doesn't matter. I mean, if I'm using a day, you know, if I'm doing let's say I'm a day trader, I'd probably be looking at 60-minute charts, 2-hour chart. I mean, 2-hour bars, 60-minute bars, 2-hour bars, and maybe daily bars as my long term.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It doesn't matter which
right,
one.
Right. No,
you're
it all
doing.
Depends on
just,
what.
Yeah,
yeah
exactly.
What
you got to pick your time frames that make sense.
You ever use a 240-minute?
You know, I don't day trade that much anymore. When I did day trade, I usually use 10-minute charts, and I'm usually trading futures.
Right. Right. So let's then segue over into stocks versus markets right now, just for a discussion. Do you find one easier to deal with in terms of understanding the technicals? Because, of course, the market overall, the general trend of market, can move a stock regardless of what was happening before. And a market itself is kind of a contained element, if you will. It's one item, you know, one position. So do you find there's a lot of difference and a different tack that you'll use and a tactic that you'd use to trade a market, whether it's an ETF or a future, versus a stock?
That's a good question. I've never had that question before. Let me think about it for just a second. I think the main difference that would come to my mind is that the periodicity, right, associated with the market versus the stock, there's probably some variance there. There's some difference. I think, you know, and what I'm trying to say is that a stock kind of has its own character. It moves at a certain pace, whereas the market probably has a different one in general. But I don't really see them from a different setup point of view. I look at them the same way in terms of the setup. So in other words, does it, you know, when I wrote this last book, I boiled trading down into just two types of setups. There's either breakouts or there's retraces, and everything else stems from that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I believe that applies to individual stocks, commodities, whatever it is, just as it applies to the general market or this even the general sector. The same setups apply to all of them.
So you mentioned
they probably have a characteristic that's maybe slightly different based on what it is.
Now, you mentioned before when something breaks down, it usually moves faster, oftentimes. Not always,
sure.
But oftentimes. Can you explain the psychology behind that to the people listening?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, fear and greed is what moves everything, and fear is a lot more powerful than greed. And so when the market starts to move on the way down, there's a tendency for an escalation in those people that are fearful, and they just want to get out, and they start throwing things out much faster. On the way up, people are methodical, much more methodical. The greed towards the very top maybe mirrors to a smaller degree the fear at the bottom of the market, but fear is you know, in my opinion, is much more intense. And that's what causes things to move a lot faster.
And then what happens is, though, that you get these crazy bounces. I mean, I've noticed over the last couple of weeks or so, and in history, but really, stocks come out with earnings. Maybe they come out with they don't meet estimates, or maybe they're guiding lower, or whatever the negative issue is in there, whatever it may be. And what happens is that there's this major move down of the stock. And by the end of the day, not only does it bounce and hold support, but it reverses and comes right back up to, let's say, the zero line. I mean, I saw a stock last week that, whether or not it was rightfully sold or not, GNC was the symbol, that came out with earnings. And again, whether it was right or wrong to sell it, not we didn't do it, but I'm saying whether it was right and wrong for the market to sell it off. But amazing the amount of support that came to it. You know, and I find that really interesting in this environment. We've had those times that investors out there and markets are very much critical of earnings, and then all of a sudden they get kind of like, oh, what's the difference?
And you were speaking of GNC Holdings, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just pulled the chart up as you're talking about it. If you put it on a weekly, there's a huge volume bar back on March 12th that it went into.
Right at the low. I agree.
And they bought it right there.
Right there. But not only did they buy it there.
They took it all the way back.
Right. I'm not talking about just buying it there and holding support. I got that.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
And maybe the selling wearing off a little bit. But let's say that, and it was down quite considerably, let's say that there was a hold and a support at that level, and then you start buying it and it comes up, but then you get these, I guess, either it's a major short squeeze or, you know, a program, an algorithm or something comes on and then just does this crazy thing and buys it like crazy. It's kind of a different, you know?
Yeah, and I'm actually looking at this chart a little bit as you're talking about it. I don't trade this particular stock, but man, this thing has this all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
And this probably gets back to your earlier question in that, is there some characteristic difference between trading a market versus a stock? And certainly this stock has a different character. I mean, this thing's all over the map.
Now, I hear you. You know, it's also interesting, I find, with stocks, and this is a psychology issue more than a technical issue. There are those stocks that people just want to have. You know, whether it's an Apple, let's say, and even though it's been in the doghouse recently, or whether it's a Starbucks or a McDonald's, you know, it doesn't really matter. They kind of say, okay, you know, bad earnings, okay, I can get that, and all, and it sells off a little bit. But then there's this groundswell, and that has to do with, I think, the institutional investor that's holding it for the long haul, let's say, that says, you know what, so what, it's down 8%. You know what, we'll buy a little bit more to average our cost down.
I believe that's exactly what happens, especially with your large cap stocks. I mean, the large institutional players, they're not in there for the day, and they're going to use, they get paid for performance against the S&P, so they have to slowly move into these things. They have large positions or move out of them, either one, and yeah, most of them are not going to give up on one bad earnings.
Right.
So, I mean, that's just an opportunity to get some more.
Right, exactly. And two bad earnings possibly, you know, you don't know.
Yeah, two or three.
Right,
I mean, I was looking at, what was it, McDonald's.
Yep.
I mean, McDonald's gave bad earnings for three or four quarters, and they buy it every time.
Yep. So, well, the same thing with Amazon. If you saw Amazon's numbers last week, they were abysmal.
They were horrible.
They were horrifying. As a matter of fact, when they came out, I'm like, really? That can't be right. There's a parenthesis around that earnings number in their outlook. And meanwhile, stock goes down about 7% and pops about 7% from there. Crazy stuff. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about the idea of using charts. Do you have a particular charting package program that you like that you could say, hey, this is something good and it's reliable? Because, you know, garbage in, garbage out, right?
Yeah, and actually one of the problems right now I'm having, I've used a profit charts that was created. Tim Knight.
Yep,
probably 10 years ago.
Wait, Tim is over at, you're talking about
Tim? I don't know who he's with now. He has that blog site, Slope of Hope.
He's been on my show a few times.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Yep. He's going to be, actually, I'm out in Vegas in a couple of weeks. He's going to be out there. I'll probably get to meet him finally.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he had what I thought was the premier trading, charting package available for many years.
Right.
And it's still probably one of the best charting packages. But the problem is that Ameritrade, who bought him probably 3-4 years ago, they just don't take care of the data. And it's starting to make the chart unusable.
Yeah, that's bad.
And,
that's bad.
You know, last week, for example, for about 7-8 days, the NDX, you couldn't even use it. I mean, the chart, you know, it was up 60 one day, down 100 the next day when in fact, it moved 10 points.
That's weird.
The charting package, the underlying data was just bad. And they have a number of issues. I brought up a bunch of issues to them. I love the charts. I think the charts are great. They're fantastic. You can create your watch list, you know, all the kinds of things you want to do. It's very simple and very pragmatic. But I would hope that they get it together because not only do I still have a 3-year subscription to them, but at the same time, I love their charts. But more and more, I'm beginning to wonder if, I'm hanging on to an old thing here that, you know, maybe it's time to move on. But that has been the charting package I've used over the years. I like it the best. I would hope that I continue to like it. I hope they get their act together.
I'll tell you something that we've done a lot of testing of different formats, whether it's through the eSignal, through whatever feed, whether it's through TradeStation, Bloomberg, and there's a few others. And I got to tell you something, especially when you're looking at volume-based pricing, that I have seen a lot of irregularities from a lot of different players. And what they tell me is, when I ask them about this, is that everybody gets information from different sources, which is bizarre, by the way. You know, you would think that if Apple trades X amount of shares per day and throughout the day it trades at these prices, it should be standardized across all platforms and data feeds, right?
You would think so.
It's not the case.
No, and matter of fact, then you complicate it even more because a lot of the charting packages actually account for, all of them account for splits, but a lot of them account for the dividends in the chart. They smooth
right.
it.
Right.
And so you have that variance as well. And that has, matter of fact, the tools that I have on my site, I'm actually about to cut to a new set of tools that actually offer both of them because they're so different.
Well, that's a big problem. I mean, and we use Bloomberg as our core data. We feel that the scrubbing, but, you know, that's expensive.
Yeah, it is.
So, but we use that.
Too expensive for my blood.
Yeah, no, it's very expensive, but it's worthwhile. I mean, we like it only because, you know, we could feel comfortable that these numbers are the numbers. And we can, you know, when we use a lot of different systems to for strategies and things like that to kind of give us some information. But we always go back and test it and check it on Bloomberg just to make sure that not something wacky out there. But even that, you know, you have to trust what you're using, right?
Yeah, and to some degree, you know, if you use, and I don't want to say if you use bad data and you use it consistently, you know, it will be okay. But if the data is generally good, and if you're using, you know, apples to apples all the time, then it's, you're going to get the same results at least. But there are times where I'll see a quote that's just wrong, and you can go to another package and you can see a difference. I can go to, you know, free things like stock charts, and I can see a difference between it and what I'm looking at on ProfitNet. And that's a problem.
Yeah, I think that stock charts, by the way, I think they include the dividend, which is not the way you want to do it, right?
They do include dividends. I actually, the one I use, Profit Charts, doesn't.
Right. You don't want to, in my opinion, you do not want to use the dividends adjusted because you get bad pricing data compared to everybody else, what everybody else in the standard uses.
Most of them don't.
Yeah.
But a few.
The stock charts does. Just to be aware of that, that you could be looking at some data, just anybody listening, you could be looking at some data, and whether it's a simple just going back to our MACD, right, or a 50-day cross. Your 50-day may be different than somebody else's because the data that they're sending you actually may include something or not. And you wouldn't know that just by the very nature of going on their site. So just a quick heads up.
That's correct. And actually, bar charts give you both.
Well, that's good to know. That's a nice site, although it's a little ugly. Their site's not the prettiest.
No, they're not. And actually, their newer ones look better.
Well, that's good.
but they still have the old one that looks like you're looking at a spreadsheet.
Yeah, exactly. Well, L.A. Little, again, thanks for joining us, author of Trend Trading Setups. And you can go visit him on tatoday.com. We'll put some links on the show notes from this episode. And hopefully, if you want, send me a separate email, and I'll try to make sure to set you up with Tim Knight.
Sounds good.
All right.
And I certainly appreciate your time, and it was a great pleasure to be on the show.
All right, good. Keep up the good trading.
Thank you so much.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
There you have it, some additional technical insight from L.A. Little. And what I thought was really most interesting also in that conversation was that his thoughts on some of the classical indicators and maybe looking more at some of the more modern discussion of, you know, volume-based and really where traders are targeting their actual entries and exits. And that is something that takes some time, but you can actually do that. So I would encourage you to look at some alternative indicators and focus really more on the volume, to focus more on the idea of volume at time. And that's something that we focus on over at Trigger Point Research, where we have the algorithms that are based on the idea of, okay, well, where is the trading actually occurring? Where is it not occurring? Where are the holes in the market? Where's the fast zones? Where's the slow consolidation zones? So that's something that's I thought was really interesting to take a look at. But nonetheless, there are a few other things that are kind of on the docket for next week and the week after and throughout the year. One of the things that you have to look at, I think, is the kind of market mood right now, clearly in a corrective phase, whether it's going to pop up or pop down. But look at when you look at a chart of, let's say, the S&P or you look at individual stocks, take a look at the difference in the complexion of what a stock pattern looks like all of a sudden over the last several weeks, where you're seeing these, if you look at candles, for example, these long wicks in either direction or these big drops in the bring back. I mean, there's kind of a different complexion versus a very orderly move to the upside or the downside. You're in a zone right now that is clearly classified as a confusion area, not in consolidation, not in a slow area. This is where you can make money actually trading, it would seem. You have to be very careful, but nonetheless, there is those opportunities that do present themselves. And one of the things you want to look for, again, is those support levels to kind of initiate a long position, positions on initiating when it hits resistance and bounces down. And there's a few different things you want to kind of really focus in on in this kind of market condition. You want to be a little bit quicker with your trading. You want to be, you know, we're not talking the buy and hold discussion here. We're talking about trading here in this discussion. You want to be quicker with your trading. You want to take profits a little bit quicker. You want to make sure that you contain losses as best as possible, because in this situation, you know, you could see markets turning on a dime and be very nimble. Be very, very nimble when it comes to how you're actually trading and what you're trading. Be careful on watching liquidity, watching stocks that have decent liquidity, and keep on revisiting charts to find out if there's something that is changing, if there is a baseline. One of the things we talked about on DH Unplugged last week was one of the stock picks that we have at the end of each show was Navistar. NAV was the symbol. Now, John Dvorak was saying, hey, this looks like a stock chart that's just absolutely horrible. And there's a lot of negativity with this. And I said, you know, I agree with you 100%. This is one of the worst looking charts I have seen in a while. And he said, well, this is probably going to be a short here. And I said, well, you know, I got to tell you something, John. If you look at this, let's look at a few things. First of all, there's some basing pattern, very, very minor looks of basing that's occurring in the last several days. This is last week or the beginning of this week, beginning of last week, excuse me. And if you look at it, there's some basing that goes on there. And oftentimes when that happens, the people that are short the position are saying, you know what, maybe I've gotten as much of the milk that I could squeeze out of this cow at this point. And what they're going to do is they're going to start covering their position. I said, the other thing that you need to notice is that these stocks that have higher short interest and these stocks that have been really down and out were kind of coming on a time when they're turning and rotating positions where they're getting rid of some of the highly qualified stocks. You know, you look at the Apple, the Googles, things like Alexion Pharmaceuticals. And when you look at that, you say, okay, well, the bottom line is, well, what are they going for? Well, again, they're going for those high short interest, flip the switch the other direction on some stocks. I said, you know what, I got to tell you something. I think this could be, even though the stock looks horrible from a trading standpoint, this could be a long position. And lo and behold, since Tuesday, I think it's up 8%. Now, we didn't actually pick that. We said it's too volatile. There's something not right with this chart. But from a trading standpoint, I wanted you to look at that and learn from that in the context that if you see a basing pattern, and even if we are in a downtrend or in a correction, that when you want to look at that, maybe there is a trading opportunity that you will see a bounce off of that. Because, again, think about the mentality and the psychology of investing and of investors. What's happening is they're looking for the greatest profit potential, and they may get spooked. And if all of a sudden you see people starting to buy, there may be those ideas stuck in their head of the short positions to say, you know what, maybe it's time to bail on this. So that's just one example. There are other charts, by the way, available on thedisciplinedinvestor.com on this show episode, plus some other links that you need to see. L.A. Little provided us with some charts to take a look at that you can look at when he's going through, you know, we're going through that interview and that discussion. So I want to thank him for that. That was awesome of you to provide us that. I appreciate that. And there's a lot of things that I wrote about this week that are coming up, the relative rotation of the markets. You're going to be seeing that. You're going to be seeing the earnings squeeze versus revenues that I talked about, the discussion of what's happening with the economics that are going to be happening. So I have a lot of things that I planned to be putting up and writing about this week on The Disciplined Investor. You could follow that either by email, by signing up at the right-hand corner there. You get a daily composite of all the things that we sent out each and every day. Or you can follow us on RSS feed, or you can follow us over on Twitter, because on Twitter we send out each and every post announcement real quick. So, you know, you can follow a variety of different ways. But just to let you know that you have that Twitter handle, at Andrew Horowitz, is something that you need to make sure that you are using, because I do put a lot of good things up intraday that are also not included on the actual blog, on the actual disciplinedinvestor.com. Other than that, I don't have much to say, so I'm not going to stretch it out more than that, because I think really what we'll be looking for this week is all about the election and the outcome, and you know, you have to be focused on that and the rest of earnings season, because that's what's really going to be in focus next week, is all about the election and earnings season, and we'll see how markets take whoever the winner is, and that will then set the next trend, I think, either in a leg down where we're going to start testing some important support levels and possibly even breaking through when this is all known, because the next thing is the fiscal cliff, and that's going to be in focus immediately post-election. And then on top of that, we have to focus on how the world takes what's going on in China and the rest of the eco, and how, in fact, the dollar reacts to all this. So with that, we'll say goodbye for the day. Make sure to go over to podcastawards.com and cast your vote, please. Any questions that you have, send it to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Oh, one more thing. We finished up Stocktoberfest, and if you haven't seen it yet, it's still at the top of the page at disciplinedinvestor.com. 30 days of stocks and maybe 60 stocks that we analyzed. See if your stock's on there. See if actually maybe whether you sent in the request or if it's a stock that you own, how it was actually rated at the time that we did it. I think there's some real good nuggets of information that you'll find there. Thanks for joining me. If you have any questions, please feel free to get in touch with me. And of course, if you're looking for a money manager, hey, we're here for that too. We have a variety of different strategies, whether it's the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth trading strategy or our global allocations. Check those out. Lots more coming on Trigger Point Research, where you can get a 14-day free trial as well. If you haven't done that yet, you're missing out on making some money, I'm going to tell you right now. Anyway, thanks for joining me. I'll see you soon. And the best of luck, the best of all things, my best wishes, health to everybody that was affected by the storm. I wish you and your families the best and a speedy recovery overall for whatever is ailing the situation, whether it's electricity, whether it's you're getting to and fro from work, transportation, whatever it is. I hope for just getting beyond it right now and moving forward and kind of getting back to your orderly and regular way of doing things in your life. I'll see you soon. Thanks for joining me. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.